Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600. And thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks. Chatting right now with Officer Mike DeVito of the Milford Police Department. Officer DeVito, good to talk to you. How are you?
I'm doing well. Good morning, Melissa. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thanks. So it was interesting, Officer DeVito. This past weekend, one of my best friends works for DCF. And I was talking to her because I guess her line of work has already started having the conversations with her and her colleagues about, you know, listen, there might come a time very soon where we're going to have to join forces with the police department and go on mental health calls. And immediately I said, well, isn't that a good thing? And she said, it is, but it's also, you know, we're not going to be armed. It's not like we're going to be like police officers where we can protect ourselves. And I thought, okay, I'm going to dive into this a little bit with Officer DeVito. First of all, what is the possibility that we're going to start seeing more social workers in police departments going on calls?
Well, I'm fairly confident, you know, not in the too distant future, we're going to start seeing some type of integration with, you know, different services, assistant police department. That's what the call is right now. And the biggest stumbling block wouldn't be you know, just how you would implement that. In much like your friend explained to you, several of these calls, not all of them, but we'll say a decent proportion of them are. There is some indication that the reason you're going there, the person may be hinting or indicating they want to either harm themselves or others. So, mm-hmm. I don't think you know, sending in unarmed, certainly alone, unarmed social workers would be safe, and I'm sure they would be hesitant, as you can understand. So the way we implemented the game plan is still a work in progress. But from a law enforcement standpoint, we would welcome additional services on a lot of these calls. Mm-hmm. Certainly, once the scene was safe, then to have other agencies brought in rather quickly. That's kind of the way we do with DCF. I mean, we already work with them hand in hand, but we're usually the first ones there. And it's basically because of the availability.
Mm-hmm.
We're working, and when calls come in for needs, stuff like that, there's situations checked out involving, households where there's a danger or potential danger. We get called in initially, but we're never hesitant to call them in as quickly as we can.
And that was going to be my follow-up is when we talk about bringing in additional services, and I totally understand that this is still a work in progress, so I don't mm-hmm. expect you to have the exact, you know, answers, but just an idea. You know, are we talking about only from 9 to 5 where we would have additional services, or are we looking at around the clock having, you know, like I said, for example, social workers available for a 1 o'clock in the morning call?
Yeah, that is the same question that I pose when we have these roundtable discussions. The same thing, you know, next weekend will be the July 4th weekend. So July 3rd into 4th into 5th and, you know, having people readily available at 2 o'clock in the morning when we are working. Those are hurdles that still have to be cleared and worked out. But you're right, this is by far not a 9 to 5 issue,
right,
as you can imagine. Those are all things that have to be worked out as this hopefully gets implemented. Like I said, law enforcement would welcome assistance with, handling juvenile matters, you know, handling mental illness, tackling the opioid crisis, which kind of we're certainly not equipped for that, but that ended up landing in our lap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, officers never thought they'd be carrying multiple packets of Narcan and dispensing them, you know, weekly and sometimes daily. And but that's not anything that we thought. We were kind of thrust into that, and so we would welcome assistance in a lot of areas. It's just a matter of how we would marry those agencies together.
For people who'd be assisting police, do you think that it would be a matter of them also being armed, or are they specifically still relying on you guys for protection on scene?
Yeah, I would go with the latter. I mean, we know we've tried these hurdles with all over the country, and not just in getting arming, you know, teachers, and we've gotten to find out the people that are most skilled in a lot of these areas aren't ones that are normally armed, and let the police that are already armed, because people are, generally speaking, want less guns, not more guns.
Right. Sure.
So we're already armed, and let's bring some other people who are armed with much other, more important things that aren't weapons. intelligence, training, experience, those kind of those that's their strength.
Mm-hmm. And what about when we talk about de-escalation training? I know you and I have talked about that extensively, and the need to continue doing that for every police department. I know some departments already focus on that, but it's not something universal. And my question would be, if you bring in people like social workers or other departments to help, does the de-escalation training kind of go out the window, or does that still become a priority for police departments?
No, it's still going to be a priority, because we're still going to have the need for that on calls where they won't be. Even if these programs get implemented, there's still going to be calls that police go on that are, sure, that they're not going to be able to rely on any other agencies except law enforcement itself. And in de-escalation, which has been implemented and used for hundreds of years, it maybe wasn't titled or coined that, but I've seen officers do some tremendous work, and it certainly doesn't make headlines when it's effective. It's only makes headlines when it's not effective. But officers, and the older they get, the less inclined they are to be interested in rolling on the ground and banging themselves up. So if they could talk someone down, that's what so much of the great de-escalation training is really on the job training, and watching some older veteran officers utilize those skills in the field is tremendous, and it passes that on. But we do, as we've talked before in our previous shows, we do teach that some of the those initial skills at the academy level, and then reinforce them.
Officer Mike DeVito of the Milford Police Department, thank you so much for talking about this and clearing up some of my questions. And I know we'll be talking again next week.
Yep, always a pleasure. Have a great week.
Thanks. You too, Officer DeVito, yep, with the Milford Police Department here on WICC 600. And I'm honored this morning to be able to talk to the Lieutenant Governor, Susan Bisowitz, who's here now. Lieutenant Governor, thanks for being here. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks so much for having me, and I'm looking forward to coming to Bridgeport to kick off our census week of action.
Yeah, so what are you calling for this week? I know you're going to be all over the state, but like you said, you're starting in Bridgeport. So what are you talking about?
We are talking about encouraging all of the hard-to-count households to fill out the census. So we're doing pretty well in the state. We have almost a 65% response rate thus far. Those are people who've responded over the internet, by phone, or mailed in their census form. But we still have to convince the remaining 35% of the households to fill out the form. And so that is what this week is about.
Mm-hmm.
And I will be in Bridgeport at 1:30 with the mayor. And we're going to kick it off with a press conference, and then we'll be going to the Hollow neighborhood to actually drop off census materials and do a neighborhood walk to encourage people in hard-to-count areas.
Mm-hmm.
So in hard-to-count areas, people are saying, well, what are those?
Yeah, I was just going to ask that.
mainly urban areas where you have a lot of apartments or multifamily housing where people are moving in and out. You tend to have hard to count areas in communities of color. So we want to get the message out in hard to count cities across the state that it's really important. And you were mentioning some of the reasons, but for instance, our disaster relief funding and hospital funding, also SNAP, WIC, Medicaid, Medicare funding, Pell Grants for college students. So many different federal programs are funded based on how many people we have in our state, and every family benefits from one or more of them, especially now when families are struggling in the aftermath of the pandemic. So we have all kinds of work to do to make sure that the remaining 35% of the population gets counted.
Why do you think we have hard-to-count populations? You know, when you talk about some of those benefits, I think those are things to fight for. And when you're talking about just filling out a piece of paper that, you know, took me maybe a minute or two, it really didn't take a lot of time. But, you know, why do we have hard-to-count populations then?
Well, first, some people may not be aware that those important programs are tied to census funding. So there's some education that needs to be done. But second, there are people who may be afraid to come forward and be counted because, let's face it, last year, the president wanted to add a question to the census that asked whether you were a citizen.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, the Supreme Court said that question could not be included, but there may still be some confusion about that or fear associated with it. And we want people to know that if you fill it out, the information will not be shared with ICE, local, federal, or state law enforcement. So the census is very safe, and as you pointed out, takes a very short period of time to fill out.
Okay. And again, we're talking to Lieutenant Governor Susan Bisewitz, and I know this has been a huge priority for you, Lieutenant Governor, since as long as I've known you. And I know we had you on the show right around when the pandemic was getting started, and you were calling on this to happen. Now, is this also a situation of it comes in the mail and people just don't see it, or people don't take the time to get on a computer either because they don't have the accessibility to one? You know, if you're one of those households, let's just say that you know, thought it was junk mail and tossed it out and you don't have access to a computer, a lot of people fall under that category. What do they do?
So that's right. So here's what they can do. They can call the U.S. Census Bureau and fill it out over the telephone. So that is another option for people. Or if the form is still sitting on your dining room table, pick it up and fill it out. Also, go to the public library when they open, and the public library can help you fill it out. Also, community action agencies across the state can be helpful as well. And there are even some initiatives in churches and faith communities to assist their clients or parishioners in filling out the census.
Okay. Well, do you have the number, not to put you on the spot, but do you have the number if they want to call the agency to get, you know, the paperwork sent back to them?
Yes, absolutely. So the phone number is 844-330-2020. 844-330-2020. Or you can go to 2020census.gov. But if you call that phone number, also there is language assistance in more than a dozen languages. And the other thing I just want to point out is don't forget to count children. 10 years ago, more than a million children were missed because people didn't think to count their newborn or their young child. So the kids in the 0 to 5 years of age are the most likely to be counted. And also the Black community is and Latino communities are also at risk of being undercounted. That's why we are spending so much time this week going to the biggest cities, and we're going to end up on Friday back in Bridgeport again, and we'll be doing a car parade to remind people as well. So we'll be in another 4 cities doing a car parade on Friday, so that should be fun, and hopefully we'll get people's attention.
Lieutenant Governor Susan Bisewitz, thank you so much for talking about this. I know the press conference day is at 1:30, and then you guys will be going out to the neighborhood. So we appreciate the effort and certainly hope that our census numbers continue to go up in Connecticut.
Thank you, Melissa. Appreciate your time.
Absolutely. And we'll talk to you, I know, very soon. That's Lieutenant Governor Susan Bisewitz here on WICC 600. First Electwoman Brenda Kupchick of Fairfield. And Brenda, good to talk to you. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa.
So I wanted to dive into something I was reading last week, I think it was in the Fairfield Citizen, that you and the Fairfield Police Chief signed a nationwide Commit to Action document, which was set up by the Obama Foundation. Now, what is the significance of this, and why did you sign it?
Well, we spoke together, just to give you a little background. We had two protests in town, and they were both peaceful, but obviously I felt we needed to address and start the conversation as a community, so I held a forum with elected officials, as many as we were allowed to under the COVID restrictions, and we opened it up to a WebEx format to allow residents to call in and share their opinions and their thoughts and ideas. I also established a task force to look into this issue more closely, having to have dialogue with our law enforcement, with members of our community, and different organizations within our community. It made sense to sign that pledge. It says you will look at your police force policies, have dialogue with your community, come up with a set of recommendations, and then share them with your community. So my police chief and I both signed on to it.
So what is your task force doing? I think it's great that you took action so quickly, but what's the task force going to do?
So I appointed Select Woman Nancy Lefkowitz, who's on the Board of Selectmen, to lead it. She and I are going to meet this week. We're going to discuss at more length the makeup of it. You know, we want to make sure we have diverse voices on it, and also African-American co-chair, because I think that's an important piece of this, mm-hmm. to be able to have that perspective as well. So we're going to be just establishing it in the next, couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. And then they'll start doing their work, holding meetings, smaller conversations where people can really dialogue instead of larger meetings or even by WebEx.
Sure. Now, what were residents saying? You were saying that in this meeting that you were able to connect residents if they had questions through WebEx. What have they been saying? What are you hearing?
Well, it's a mixed bag. Mm-hmm. There is many people emailing or calling, and even during that meeting, frustrated with the injustice that residents or just people across our country of color who feel that they're having a different experience living in our country than we are, than white Americans are. So that's obviously something we all need to be talking about. There are people who are concerned about police policies. And then on the other hand, we have quite a few residents who are very supportive of the Fairfield Police, mm-hmm. and feel that they do a very good job, and feel that there's a sense of feeling that they're being characterized in an unfair manner based on the actions of police in other parts of our country. So there's a lot of dialogue and a lot of feelings, and I think we need to look into this a little bit more and let people have their chance to talk and then come up with real information to be able to share and then have a more detailed conversation based on facts.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That are happening inside our own town and in the state of Connecticut.
First Selectwoman Brenda Kupchick, who is speaking with us out of Fairfield this morning. Now, switching gears, I know I had emailed you immediately. I emailed Mayor Ben Blake about this, and I think Mayor Rilling. I was emailing all of you guys because I wanted to know. The governor had changed his protocols the night before Phase 2 went into place for social gatherings. And one of the things he wanted to change was right in time for 4th of July. He wanted to up the amount for public spaces to 500 people as long as you were social distance and all that, so that people could still enjoy the fireworks. Now, my understanding is that would take such an effort to now double back and go back to fireworks. That's not happening this year in Fairfield still, correct?
Correct. And so, you know, the governor came out sort of at the last minute with those changes. And some of these executive orders are changed, too, you know, at the last minute or modified. So towns are scrambling to comply in advance. And then when there's changes like that, especially in this case, you know, there's a tremendous amount of planning that goes into pulling off a firework display.
Yes.
Way in advance when we decided. It was because the company needed us to cancel or confirm in advance, or we would have lost our deposit with them. So, and that's similar to other towns. And we looked at it, but first of all, every town in Fairfield County has canceled their fireworks. And if Fairfield had made a decision to switch gears and somehow be able to pull it off, which would be very difficult to do with permitting issues, because you have to be permitted through the state, and logistic issues. There's no way we could stop it from being at 500.
Sure, sure.
So it's just not feasible. I know it's disappointing to a lot of members of our community. It's disappointing to me, but it's just too risky to hold an event like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, are there other things that people can look forward to in Fairfield? Are there any other things happening for the 4th of July, or is this just going to be sort of a year that, look, we've had to sacrifice a lot of things, and if it means celebrating the Independence Day with just your family and keeping it, you know, more private, then that's what we do. Is there anything going on in Fairfield?
Well, I haven't talked to any of my veterans groups yet. Usually there's a reading of the Declaration of Independence on our town green. I'm going to have to touch base with them this week to figure out, you know, because obviously you can't have more than a specific amount of people, and mm-hmm. I want to make sure that if we're going to do something like that, that we're within the guidelines. But I think you've hit it on the head, Melissa. People, I think this year are going to be more staying at home and spending time with family, which most of us have not been able to do for a long time.
True.
So that's a nice thing to do. And I know every year I read the Declaration of Independence at my own home with my family. So I hope people do that, because it's important. And I want to make a quick note. We are getting a huge amount of complaints from residents across the town about illegal fireworks being set off.
Oh, thank you for bringing this up. Yep, I'm really tired of it too. I'm not even in Fairfield. We have it in Milford, and it's driving us insane. It's waking up our son, and it's super dangerous.
Yeah.
So please talk about it. Please go for it.
Yeah, it's way worse this year than it's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
And our law enforcement is running around town getting complaints, and you know, it's almost nearly impossible to figure out where it came from.
Sure.
After the fact. And we actually had a fire last night, and they think it, you know, we don't know exactly yet.
But that's the brush fire you're talking about?
Yes, and
yeah.
It looks like it may have came from fireworks.
Oh, no.
So, you know, residents, I hope whoever's listening, we can't have that. It's dangerous, and as you say, it's very disruptive. People are saying the fireworks are going off at, you know, midnight.
Yeah.
Early morning hours, and people are trying to sleep, and children and dogs, and you know, just to remind everyone, it's illegal.
Right, right. That, yeah, just the underlying fact that you're actually not allowed to do that. So, you know, that's important to throw in there, too.
Exactly.
Well, that's good to know. I appreciate that update for Selectwoman Brenda Kupchick. In fact, I'm going to cut that. I'm going to have Christian, I think he's recording this straight to our tapes. I'm going to play that a few times throughout this week and next week, because I think it's an important reminder, certainly. And, you know, like we said, private, you know, having your own private celebrations and everything is great. But if you are going to take it upon yourself to do fireworks, well, you can't and you shouldn't.
Right. I mean, there's a certain amount of approved that you can use at home,
mm-hmm.
but obviously the ones that we've all been hearing the last couple of weeks, those aren't the approved types.
Those aren't your stop and shop ones that you're finding. No,
no.
Those aren't the little firecrackers.
No, they're not.
Exactly. Well, First Electwoman Brenda Kupchick, thank you so much for coming on this morning. I appreciate it, and I'll be talking to you really soon.
All right, you take care, Melissa.
I appreciate it. Always love talking to you.